At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
This economy has been on a wild ride this year, but we have vaccines, more government relief, and, oh, another election coming up. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Washington, D.C., I'm Kimberly Adams. It's Thursday, December 31st, the last day of 2020. Glad to have you with us to close out the year. We are about to end the year with nearly 20 million Americans out of work and receiving jobless benefits. And millions of people are turning to food banks for the first time. Whatever recovery 2021 may bring will likely come down to consumer spending, which, as we often point out, accounts for more than two-thirds of U.S. economic activity. And over the past couple of months, that spending has been trending down. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra reports on whether the latest pandemic relief package might change that trajectory.
When Congress passed the first relief bill in March, it worked, eventually. John Lear is an economist at Morning Consult.
The passage of the CARES Act drove an increase in consumer confidence, and that in turn translated into an increase in consumer spending. But it took a few weeks for that effect to play out.
It takes time for the checks to hit people's bank accounts, for states to distribute the unemployment benefits, and for people to spend the money. Lear says he expects the same this time around. And the government is giving people half as much money this time, so he expects any bump in consumer spending to be smaller. Also, Sonia Lipinski at Alex Partners says this moment is still looking pretty bleak. The virus is more widespread than it was in the spring. The vaccine rollout is taking longer than expected.
And I think that all of those things together are going to make everyone, make consumers more wary about going out and spending their $600 paychecks right away.
Gregory Dacko, chief U.S. economist at Oxford Economics, says the relief package will help a lot of families that have lost jobs this year. But ultimately, this money is a bridge until the virus is under control.
What you need to see in order to have a strong and sustainable economic recovery is a strong and sustainable health recovery. And that will only come gradually over the next few months.
Maybe not until late spring or summer. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
Just a few more days to go in the Georgia Senate runoff elections, which will determine which party controls the Senate. So far, estimates are, campaigns and outside groups have spent close to $500 million on political advertising in the races. And with all that cash flowing into the state, there's at least one winner already. Small Market Radio. Susanna Capilluto of WABE in Atlanta reports.
Joseph Brennan manages 11 radio stations for PMB Broadcasting in West Georgia.
Top 40, country, adult contemporary, gospel, active rock, classic rock. We just got a little bit of it all.
And what all the stations now have is political ads, lots of them.
Vote David Perdue.
Vote for working people. Vote Reverend Warnock.
The choice for Georgia, Kelly Loeffler.
John Ossoff will listen to doctors and scientists.
Financial disclosures show all four candidates in the race are spending a big chunk of their radio dollars outside of the major Atlanta market, including Brennan's stations.
I've been in the industry for 20 years now in this market, and the amount of money that we're seeing across our stations is more than the past 20 years combined. honestly.
That's also true for Charles Hubbard, who owns a country and a sports radio station in rural Jessup, Georgia.
It's a godsend that we're receiving this now.
He says the campaign dollars for the runoff help make up losses from COVID-19.
Let's just put it this way. It's coming in at a good time for radio stations, I can tell you.
As a newly minted battleground state, Georgia already got its fair share of ads for the November election. Then both U.S. Senate races ended up in a January 5th runoff. Republican Senators Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue are trying to hold off a challenge from Democrats John Ossoff and the Reverend Raphael Warnock. Eddie Esserman owns three different radio stations along the Georgia coast. He says political ad money has now exceeded the revenue he lost due to the pandemic.
Before Georgia got the spotlight shined on it, they got more than usual, but not a fire hose of advertising like we're getting now.
Lots of other small stations are seeing those ad dollars, too. Roger Rafson with Gen Media Partners is in charge of placing political ads on more than 150 small market radio stations across Georgia.
There is so much money being spent in Georgia right now that they are asking us what is the maximum number of commercials that we can buy.
Because of an FCC rule that says candidates have to be charged the lowest rate, their money can go far in small markets.
For candidates, some of these ads are downright inexpensive. You can have a full minute of your message for under $20 in some cases. It's really cheap.
But it's a different story for political PACs, which make up the bulk of ad spending in Georgia right now. At least 18 PACs are running radio ads, and they have to pay top dollar, says Refson.
As we get closer to January 5th, many radio stations are raising their rates just because they are selling out, and this is their opportunity to do well. And if the PAC wants to really reach their audience, they will pay the rate.
The reason there's so much PAC and out-of-state money is because of the possible power shift in the Senate, should the two Democrats win. Emory University political scientist Andrew Gillespie says while Republicans have won these Senate runoffs in Georgia in the past, this year Democrats are also energized and have money to spend.
Because Joe Biden just won the presidential race and Democrats are now able to flex muscles in terms of being able to say that they've won a statewide election, there is greater incentive for people to be involved in the race.
The race, she says, is all about turnout, and Georgians in every corner of the state will have heard that there's another election January 5th. Whether or not all the ads make them come out to vote is another story. In Atlanta, I'm Susanna Capoluto for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, markets ended the year up across the board. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. This year has been big for streaming services, with many people spending more time at home or just needing a distraction from everything. Like many others, I watched a lot of anime. Japanese animation is having a moment. Earlier this year, the film adaptation for the popular series Demon Slayer became the highest-grossing film premiere ever in Japan, and during a pandemic, no less. Also earlier this month, anime streaming platforms Crunchyroll and Funimation announced they'll merge in a nearly $1.2 billion deal. So there's money and demand for the medium right now. Here to talk about it, we have Lindsay Loveridge, executive editor at the Anime News Network. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Kimberly.
So why is anime having a global moment right now? I know it's not just me.
Oh, no. Anime has been having a moment for the last couple of years, but I think it's especially increased during the pandemic. People have been inside and looking through their queue, and maybe they've watched all their episodes of Great British Bake Off and they want to move on to something else. So anime is a global phenomenon, I would say. It's definitely exploded. And there's a little bit of something for everybody, no matter what your tastes are.
Yeah, you've got sort of the action, you've got the fantasy or the genre that they call slice of life, with just sort of snapshots of how people live there every day. And there's just a huge backlog of content for people who are running out of things to watch.
Oh, definitely. We get about 30 to 40 new shows out of Japan every 3 months. So in a year, you're getting 150 different shows to pick from.
Talk to me about the business landscape for anime and how that is changing since it is rising in global popularity.
Anime has definitely made some major investment changes over time as far as who's become interested in it. And we've seen streaming services get very deeply involved in the production of anime as far as getting series made just for Netflix or just for Crunchyroll or just for Funimation. They're putting the money forward to get on those production committees and make some of the decisions about what gets adapted based on what they think will be popular.
Do you have any sense of how this global popularity of anime is playing out among fans in Japan?
All I can say about that is that whenever I talk to creators, directors, character designers, producers, they're always happy to see that there is an international response to their art, and that it, even though it's made in Japan, that's not limiting its appeal to kids in Europe or South America. There's huge fandoms for shows that didn't really take off in the U.S., so there ends up being different Touchstone series in different countries all over. And I think that's great.
What was the first anime show that you watched and that got you into it?
The first one that got me into it, like hooked, was Sailor Moon. That's around when we got access to the internet in my house, and there was all these fan websites. There's a whole culture, like a social culture. And for me, I was someone who, you know, I had a hard time making friends and meeting people with similar interests, but that was all online. And I could have this online life with friends who had that interest.
The big one for me was Inuyasha on Cartoon Network. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a really good one.
Yeah, and that one still has a lot of fans. It actually got a new spinoff this year. It's a whole new entry point for fans.
Yeah, and I imagine from a business perspective, a reason to sort of relicense the back catalog.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But as somebody who's been into anime for a really long time, you know, you talked about sort of feeling a little bit lonely in that space when you were younger. What's it like sort of seeing it go mainstream?
I think it's wonderful. Anime to me was, I think, kind of eye-opening. It started as just, you know, cartoons I liked to watch and characters that I felt a sense of connection with, but it also opened me up to other cultures. And you get curious about that. And that curiosity, I think, is wonderful. Everyone should have a curiosity for things outside of their immediate circle, however they happen to get that.
Lindsay Loveridge is the executive editor at the Anime News Network. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up,
this has been the hardest year I've seen in the 20 years that I've been working.
A lot of folks are right there with you. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average picked up 196 points, 0.6%, to close at 30,606. The Nasdaq found 18 points, 0.1%, to finish at 12,888. And the S&P 500 rose 24 points, 0.6%, to end at 3756. And for the year, in which at least 340,000 people died from COVID in the U.S. and a deep recession set in, the Dow gained about 7%. The S&P 500 rose about 16%, the Nasdaq ascended by roughly 43%. Zoom was barely on the radar pre-pandemic, but then lockdowns, working from home, etc. The company's stock rose more than 400% this year. Bonds rose, the yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 0.91%. The yield to start the year of 2020, 1.78%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kimberly Adams. Now that we have COVID-19 vaccines available, the focus is on distribution, which is not going so well here in the U.S. The CDC acknowledged yesterday that while the goal had been for about 20 million people to have their first dose by now, fewer than 3 million people actually have. Elsewhere in the world, vaccine distribution is either underway or they're getting ready. Companies in Singapore are building up capacity and expertise. The city-state is a key transport and logistics hub for Southeast Asia. The BBC's Karishma Vaswani reports.
I'm going to miss you, Tawan. I'm going to miss you.
The last time Rafiq saw his family was in August. He's been separated from them for months because of the pandemic. He missed his grandfather's funeral and his honeymoon with his new wife.
The worst thing is I can't attend the funeral.
Rafiq has been working at logistics firm DHL in Singapore for 5 years, commuting from Malaysia every day. But when the border closed because of the pandemic, he stayed to keep his job and provide for his family.
Every day I used to video call with my wife, my family. They always ask me, when are you going back to Malaysia? I said, I have no clue yet. I have to wait until the vaccine is arrived. Vaccine is the only hope.
After months of waiting, vaccines are finally in the works. But transporting them out here to Asia in this heat isn't going to be easy. It's a hot, sunny day here in Singapore. The average temperature in this part of the world is around 30 degrees Celsius. So getting the temperature right is critical. One mistake and the entire batch might have to be thrown away.
Wow, it is cold.
Yeah, I'm glad it's 2 to 8 degrees here. So that's really the limit, 2 to 8. It's probably now about 6 degrees as we speak.
Which is why cold chain facilities are so important. Tom Van Mulcott is the Executive Vice President of Distribution and Client Services for Zurlig Pharma, one of the biggest vaccine distributors in Asia. He showed me around the firm's cold chain warehouse in Singapore. They're expanding across the region to get ready for the arrival of COVID-19 vaccines.
It's a lot of weight on a lot of people's shoulders. There are so many unknowns that we need to be able to manage, that we need to make sure that everybody plays its role, and we will have to increase collaboration among the different parties to make sure that everybody is ready at the right time. And there's so many different pieces that need to fit together to make sure that the vaccine gets to the right patient at the right time, in the right quantity and in the right condition as well.
Zoellig isn't the only company eyeing a piece of the pie. At the DHL warehouse, it's always brisk business ahead of the festive season, but soon they could be moving more precious cargo. Leonora Lim is the Vice President of Life Science and Healthcare at DHL. She told me why being based in Singapore will help with the rollout of vaccines.
We see Singapore potentially playing an important role for the region. A strategic location within a 7-hour flight radius is able to reach a population of 4 billion people. We are expecting up to 10 billion doses that need to be moved. So this translates to 15,000 flights, 200,000 pallets, you know, 15 million cooling boxes on a scale that we've never seen before. So it's something that we need to get prepared as early as possible.
Singapore's national carrier is also getting ready. On the tarmac today, temperature-controlled containers are being loaded up onto a plane heading to Sydney, Australia, flying medication. Someday soon, they'll be flying vaccines. Nothing like this has been attempted before at such speed and scale. Economies all over the world are holding their breath. And finally, hope is on the horizon.
That's the BBC's Karishma Vaswani. Every weekday morning, Marketplace Morning Report has the latest in international business and economic news. Check it out on air or in our podcast feed. The new year always brings with it change in one way or another. Several states have new minimum wage increases kicking in. Regulations and contracts are expiring, as are copyright protections for books, songs, and other works published in 1925. Tomorrow, they will officially be in the public domain, free for anyone to use. So, what exactly happens then? Marketplace's Jasmine Gartz explains.
Among the notable artists with some songs going public tomorrow, Duke Ellington. Also the silent film Lovers in Quarantine, about a couple that has to quarantine together for a whole week. Yeah, sounds real rough. Virginia Woolf's Mrs. Dalloway and F. Scott Fitzgerald's novel The Great Gatsby. Professor Lucy Jewell at the University of Tennessee College of Law says,
you'll probably see the price of the book coming down on Amazon because now there's no proprietary publisher of it.
And a new prequel to The Great Gatsby is publishing in just a few days. A creative explosion often happens when works of literature or music go public, says NYU law professor Barton Beebe.
It's much more affordable to use them, be it in a big budget, you know, Hollywood movie, or even in like a high school play or something like that.
And the originals often also get a revival. One example?
I said I wish I'd never been born.
The holiday movie It's a Wonderful Life bombed at the box office in 1946. Then in 1974, a legal glitch temporarily released it into the public domain, which meant stations could play it over and over and over again, turning it into a classic. So, if you're thinking of producing your own version of The Great Gatsby, you have the green light. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
...2020 was also a year of multiple extreme natural disasters. Southwest Louisiana was hit by not one, but two hurricanes this year, just 6 weeks apart. And for small businesses in the area already struggling to survive the pandemic, it was a triple whammy. But it's about to be a new year, and folks have been rebuilding. That's the case for today's installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Kevin Ames. I am a baker here in Lake Charles, Louisiana. The name of the bakery is Miss Johnny's Gingerbread House. It's actually a business that my parents started way back when I was just a little kid. They started off as just a side business to kind of supplement their incomes. People started liking their product, and eventually they just started doing it full time. We are what I would call an old-fashioned bakery. We sell gingerbread, and we sell sweet dough pies and pralines. We sell a lot of things, but that's what everybody really comes for. It's a taste of Louisiana. You don't really find that kind of stuff anywhere else. The pandemic impacted the business quite a bit. This has been the hardest year I've seen in the 20 years that I've been working. When Hurricane Laura hit, we had only been back open from the pandemic for about 7 weeks. We weren't worried at the time. We didn't really think it was going to be anything that would really affect us because we've had a few hurricanes before. But little did we know that it would affect us drastically. We had all the electricity poles were down, all the phone lines were down. And, you know, the business had damage. We had to go inside and basically pull out most of the sheetrock out of the ceilings and mop up. There was water everywhere. Just way more damage than what we expected. We had to gut it. So it took us right at 3 months just to get back to business. This is the busiest time of the year for us. So we lost a whole lot. And you know, we will not be able to recoup it monetarily, but we're still alive and well. So, you know, we're blessed. Reopening, it went well. I'm really ecstatic. I'm happy because there's a lot of people that are still not home. There's a lot of people that are still displaced. So just the fact that people were coming, I wasn't sure how we would, you know, survive afterwards. Well, it's going to be a struggle. The hurricane, it's going to affect the bottom line for quite a while. Even though I have walk-in business, the places that I wholesale sell to, the grocery stores and so forth, they're closed and not sure when they're going to reopen. So not only myself, but, you know, all the small businesses, it's going to be tough for a while.
That was Kevin Ames baking sweet dough pies and pralines in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Tell us about your economy online at marketplace.org/myeconomy. This final note on the way out today, early in the pandemic, a lot of local distilleries started making hand sanitizer. Well, on Tuesday, the Food and Drug Administration put a notice in the Federal Register announcing those distilleries will need to pay about $14,000 in fees since now they're basically selling medical products. And they'll owe another $14,000 unless they stop making it and selling it by today. And now for your Thursday moment of economic context. Since I'm here in D.C., a few political numbers. 2020 broke all kinds of spending records in terms of politics. The Center for Responsive Politics says 9 of the 10 most expensive Senate races ever happened this year, as did 4 of the 10 most expensive House races. And the Trump campaign is still spending and raising money to fight Donald Trump's loss in the presidential election. Amir Babawi, Siobhan Brett, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Kat Green, Rick Carr, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kimberly Adams. Happy New Year's Eve, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow. This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.